Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. This is just going to be fabulous. I mean, the whole concept is fabulous. You guys are going to love this. And I just urge you, I heard from the theater's press agent, tickets are going fast. So I just want to preface this by saying we are celebrating a wonderful play today. And this is The Shark is Broken. Now, you might wonder, what the heck does that mean? How do you break a shark? Just wait. You'll find out. So The Shark is Broken, and it's written by Ian Shaw and Joseph Nixon, and it's directed by Pesha Rudnick. And this is a wonderful production, and it's not going to go on forever. So the runtime is 95 minutes without intermission. The show runs Wednesday through Sunday, starting February 4th to February 22nd, with one show on Tuesday. Well, that's actually, the 10th. That's coming up soon. And this is actually, we are so thrilled because we've got three actors and one director with us today. And we're going to talk a little bit about the show. But before we do, I want to tell you how cool this concept is. Everybody, Richard, everybody in the world knows Jaws, right? You know Jaws, the movie Jaws, right? Everybody knows Jaws. So Ian Shaw is the son of Jaws star, who I always thought was sexier than chopped liver. That was Jaws star Robert Shaw. And Ian Shaw co-wrote and plays his own dad in the new Broadway comedy about the behind-the-scenes feud that actually happened on the set. But it's embellished by some really interesting story twists. Some of the story twists involve, it's crazy. I was reading some of the reviews of the Broadway production. Some of the story twists involve things that actually happened and things that didn't happen. But some of the things that did happen, fights, booze, you know, the list goes on. And so that's going to be talked about a little bit today. But what was so interesting was this article I found in New York Theater Guide about how Ian Shaw decided to write this play about, you know, the big maquette, Richard, that's the shark, Jaws, how that came to be. And that is in the title, The Shark is Broken. And the kind of, I don't know, craziness that ensues around the shark being broken, etc. It says in this article, by the way, and I imagine you actors, I'm director with me today, you've read it, because it says that Ian Shaw was really kind of like got cold feet writing this again and again, thinking, how can I do this? I mean, what is it that is universal about this? And what is it that inspired him about being a young guy on the set with his dad? You know, with Spielberg while they're filming Jaws. But I can't wait to see it. And let me introduce who's here today. Okay. So first of all, Richard, you should know that the characters in the play are the actual actors. So Richard Dreyfuss is played by Will Block, and Will is with us today. And his credits are pretty amazing. I'm just going to point out a few. You've seen him at ECT before. ETC before, and he was, he's been in Hamlet, Thanksgiving Play, The Wickhams. He's been in a lot of regional, all over the country, a lot of regional theater all over the country. The thing that I kind of was like, Master Harold and the Boys at Sacramento Theater Company, I wish I would have seen that production with him. Prince Hal and Henry IV, these are just some of the things I've picked out that were, oh my gosh, these are so interesting to me. Will is a graduate of UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television, And apparently he owes his success to a strange specter named Wonder Cat. No, Hairless Wonder Cat.
Yeah, that would be Junebug, my Sphinx, the Sphinx cat that I share with my partner Margaret. Yes, it's all for Junebug.
This is you owe your success in life to Junebug, and that this is a Sphinx. If I'm right in thinking, the Sphinx is the one that looks more like a dog, has the tail that.
It's just a hairless cat. I'd say it looks more like a science experiment gone terribly wrong.
It looks like a science experiment, you said?
Yeah, it's just a hairless cat.
I see. It's a hairless cat. So now we know what we're in for right now. The Robert Shaw character is played by Gildart Jackson. And Gildart's been, I don't know, all over the place. I mean, he's been on TV. He's been in films. He's been so many different, I don't know, containers for his talents. He's won an Audi. He was nominated twice more for an Audi. Which is why, you know, what you know is the top of the pinnacle for audiobooks, Richard, by the way. So, you know, Richard is always interested. We've been doing this show together for 20 years, and Richard's done a lot of audiobooks in his time. And so, but we have Gildart, who's won an Audi. He actually, if you look at his website, it's going to be so cool. I'm going to put myself to sleep tonight with one of these, firesidereading.com. He ended up recording some of the great classics. His voice is beautiful. He's British trained. And you'll hear it when you go. I would have liked to have seen Burn Notice. That would have been, I don't know, all of the plays that he's worked in. And, of course, on TV. General Hospital, Charmed, The Bull Type, Providence, Whodunit, then, Young and Restless. I mean, and a lot of films too in his background. So, you know, amazing talent. The guy who plays Roy Scheider, is Adam Poole, and Adam is here with us. There's Adam. Yeah, I see Adam.
Yes.
And this is his debut with ETC. Mm-hmm. And I would have liked to have seen him in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And then he's performed all over Los Angeles. Now, how are you the kind of actor that can do Julius Caesar and the Putnam County Spelling Bee? I mean, that's pretty accomplished. Very, very, very.
Something by pure luck and just going.
Pure luck, no.
To scoring the role, which I'm fortunate enough to be. Oh, yeah.
So he is a graduate of UNC Chapel Hill's graduate acting program. My son and daughter-in-law both were at Duke, and my daughter-in-law did her master's. Yeah, and they did her master's at UNC at Chapel Hill, and then they both went back to Duke Law, and
that's a great school.
Okay, so I'll tell you a funny story about North Carolina. So when they became engaged. And they were still kind of struggling through colleges, you know, UNC and Duke, blah, blah, blah. And they called me and said, Mom, we found a fantastic house and it's way too expensive. It's in Durham, mm-hmm. North Carolina, and it's way too expensive. We would never be able to afford it. We're going to beg you for some help. It's our first house. We'd love to have it. We'd love to have it. But we're afraid to tell you the price. Because you won't
you tell us the price.
Good one, Adam.
What's the price?
We are afraid to tell you the price. We are just petrified. I said, go ahead, tell me. I'm in Santa Barbara. Nothing's going to surprise me price-wise. I was thinking, okay, brace yourself. It's going to be, you know, 800 to a mil, somewhere in there. 180,000, Mom, and it's on an acre. And can we ask you for a little bit of money to help with that? 180,000. I said to him, my son's name is Lachlan, you cannot rent a Marburg porta potty in Santa Barbara for 180,000 for a wedding.
I mean, where did they find that?
Yeah, I mean, but that was a couple of years ago, but the property, if I would have told you, and I bet you feel the same way. I don't know when you graduated, Adam, but
2020.
Okay, so they're older than you. So when they left Duke, property values in Durham were so cheap, we should have bought the whole block, basically. I mean, it's just amazing. And now it's quite a happening place. Durham was kind of rough at one point, but now it's quite happening, don't you think?
Yeah, it definitely was. It's huge now, especially after the pandemic, the housing market blew up.
It was absolutely nowhere. And, you know, you as a college student, you could have kind of, anyway, I waffle on. Pesha Rudnick is here, director. I mean, she's got a fantastic little video on a TED Talk about how dangerous theater can be. And I encourage you, if you haven't already, to take a listen. It's entitled "The Danger of Live Theater," and
I watched that now.
Have you guys seen it?
Tonight? Oh my god!
The actress. Have you seen the TED Talk that she did?
Oh, that's too terrifying.
Actually, I have. Yeah, I did.
I'm going to see it.
It's fantastic. And, you know,
way, but the heartbeat of theater, yeah.
So she is a board member of Second Stage Theater in New York City, Lights Up Theater Company here in Santa Barbara, local theater company in Colorado. She's a member of the Stage Directors and Choreographers Society. She's got a passion for new plays. And she's done new plays, directed new plays at the American Repertory Theater at Harvard, the Kennedys. Oh, well, we won't talk about that. The La Jolla Playhouse, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, Florida Stage, Curious Theater Company. She located here because she's now a member of the faculty at UC Santa Barbara Department of Theater and Dance. And she's got her bachelor's from University of California and a master's from NYU, I guess, at the Tisch School. Is it the Tisch School that you would have had?
Yeah, and the Steinhardt School of Education.
Okay. Well, we have a magnificent cast here. We talked a little bit about Ian Shaw, who is one of the writers, again, the star of the Broadway production, but the son of Robert Shaw, who is the, you know, gorgeous guy, the police guy, I think, in Jaws. And it's so interesting because he was raised in Britain and he studied American theater in England. His background is pretty fantastic, too. A co-writer with Joseph Nixon. And so how did this... Okay, I'm going to start with Pesha because maybe she knows the answer to this question. How did this play come up on the radar here, either with you, Pesha, or... I mean, how did this play end up here in Santa Barbara?
Yeah, so Scott enjoys telling this story. Scott is the producing artistic director here at Ensemble Theater Company. He and a few fellow board members saw the Broadway production in 2022, I believe, and was one of the very first regional producers to request the rights and then held on to the rights for... you know, the last 2.5 years, 3 years, and last year sent the script to me and asked if I would consider joining as the director. So he's been passionate about this project for a number of years. Very excited to bring it to Santa Barbara.
Okay, so that's how it ended up here. We had some talented people that saw it on Broadway. Okay, couple of questions. Number one, I want to start with Pesha again on this first question. So in the interviews I was reading with Ian Shaw, he acknowledges that the Jaws film set was toxic. And I wanted to know, you know, and that had to do with, I could go on with the further quote, he was talking about some of the chemistry between his dad, you know, and Dreyfus, Roy Schneider. It was talking about the toxicity on the set. You're directing this show. How do you egg on toxicity? You know what I'm saying? How do you manifest that toxicity?
I love the word chemistry that you brought up. I think it's about capturing the chemistry between these three performers and the performers or the actors that they're portraying, so Scheider, Shaw, and Dreyfus, and recognizing the circumstances that they were in. What we know about the set from from Robert Shaw's journals and from Carl Gottlieb's book about the making of Jaws is that there were so many circumstances that created this storm, both of sort of personalities clashing, but also, you know, waiting around for this mechanical shark to be fixed. There was such a sort of a tempest of drama around them that I think that these actors are just playing out what was happening on the set. So we did a lot of, you know, we played a lot in the room, and we obviously drew all of our inspiration from the text.
Okay, so a question Richard and I like to ask people that are as talented as you and direct. My sister is a SAG actress in New York, and she is always complaining. She never knows when she starts a play if the director is going to let her actually do anything, or if the director is going to be like my former, I was in ballet, Pesha, and I came up in a Balanchine company. And oh, so wonderful. If you come up in a Balanchine company, you do not
not a lot of creativity there.
No, you don't make, you do not actually say, oh, I think artistically I should be doing this. You don't do that. So I'm thinking, okay, well, what sort of director are you? Now you said you're looking at the room, you're looking at the dynamics, the chemistry of the three actors before you. Are you letting them sometimes make their own decisions? Are you actually?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
Oh, absolutely. Of course.
Okay.
My approach is to, and you can ask the guys about this, but my approach is to have a shared agreement about what the event of every scene is and drive towards that as an ensemble, and then give them the freedom to get there however they feel like their character would best arrive. At least that's the plan. That's what I try to go towards. And hopefully audiences will see a little something different every night. We're trying to create a container where they can play and be present and keep the chemistry really firing every night. So tonight's performance, for example, will be slightly different from what our first preview audience saw last night.
Hopefully.
And that's all part of the plan.
Okay. I was intrigued in a couple of the interviews with Ian Shaw, one of the co-writers and the son of Jaws star Robert Shaw, where he is referring to some of the historic material about Jaws that led to that book by, I guess it was Alvis and Gottlieb, that he has his dad's, and I want an explanation of this, he has his dad's drinking diary.
Ian Shaw described
his
drinking diary. Well,
yeah.
You know that Robert Shaw was a writer himself and kept a diary. And I think that I know that the original inspiration for this show was a solo performance that Ian Shaw wrote based on his father's diaries. And then as the process grew and as the play was developed, he added additional characters and relied on other sources. But yeah, that diary I think was a central inspiration for the play.
Okay. Wanted an explanation. The other thing I directed towards you, the director, is that I've noticed there's such a resurgence, makes Richard and myself feel like really old, but there's a resurgence of, you know, interest in films of the 70s. And theater of the 70s and fashion of the 70s, styles of the 70s. I understood that, you know, there's a remake of that movie, that Married to the Mob. Does anyone remember that?
Yeah.
Can you believe that? Well, yeah, you've got the young ones.
You'll have to encourage your listeners to come to the show because Robert Shaw has a lot of feelings about
remakes
and sequels and this idea that we're sort of recycling stories over and over again. And I do believe that is true. I think that we recycle stories and we revisit stories and we find our own way into them in every generation. So maybe Love Story will come back.
I think what I before, and I haven't seen the play. I've got tickets, but I haven't seen the play. But I want to know.
When are you coming?
When am I coming? I'll get back to you. I've got to look at my diary.
All right.
But I want to know how Pesha brought the 70s into the performance.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, the play does it for us. There are the character, Roy Scheider, the actor, had a newspaper in his hand almost the entire time of filming. That was his baby blanket.
Window into the world and baby blanket.
And so the playwrights bring the context of the 70s and the political turmoil of the 70s into the play. In terms of design and style, I think it'll be fun for your listeners to come visit the Orca because we recreated the Orca, the 48-foot fishing boat that the all the shark scenes or all the shark chase scenes take place on. And then in terms of fashion and style, our costume designer, Adriana, did a beautiful job recreating the costumes from the film. So I think it was a real 360 approach. And then music and sound plays a huge role in this. And Jaser, our sound designer and composer, created original sound inspired by John Williams' soundtrack.
So you're not using any of the music per se, but
we're not allowed to. It's protected. But Jaser's done a skillful, beautiful job creating original sound for our production that I think, drops into, well, I'll let your listeners decide for themselves, but captures the essence of the film and the soundtrack of the film.
Okay, thank you for that. And just, one final question for you as a director. If you could say that you've learned one thing from directing this show as opposed to many other shows that you've directed, what do you think you'd take away? What would be the takeaway from this from the show? The shark is broken. What did you take away from this? What added to your, tool bag? Yeah. What added to your psychic, tool chest here?
Yeah. I think that play has to be the center of the work. And that if you stay in a place of play, you create a container for creativity and freedom. And these three ne'er-do-wells were so much fun to play with. And I think it's the thing I'm most excited about for our audiences is just to spend 96 minutes with them and take a break from the world and take a break from what's outside of the doors of the theater and just sort of together.
I was going to say, Pesha, at the same time when I was researching this last night furiously, because this is a short notice interview, and I thank both you and the actors for joining me. But I was researching this thinking, look at the parody between 1974 and today, where the big threat is the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and questioning, I'll have my own, but leadership. And what it means to be a leader, and what this country needs or is moving towards in terms of.
Sure, I mean this is a very prescient play. It's extremely prescient, not from the sheer fact of the threat idea, the other idea, the leadership idea, the ship of state idea. All these things are wrapped in together into the play. Well, enough of that. Richard's giving us, we have to go to quick break. When we get back from the break, I've got some questions for the actors, definitely. I want to start with Will. And I want to see how he brings, and I'll just preface this by saying Richard Dreyfuss is one of my favorite actors ever, ever, ever. And I was so... You know, Goodbye Girl, and what's the one with the
Moon Over Parado?
The aliens.
The Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes. And so I was involved in a pretty serious accident and I was laid up. Wow. And I just watched that film like three times over and over and over and over. I loved it. I just fell in love with him. Find out that he had his issues too, as far as mental wellness. And, you know, was interested to know. Yeah, was interested to make a note that this incredible genius, you know, was a real fighter as well. So I wondered how you felt about that. Anyway, Richard's giving us, so we go to a quick break. We get back from the break. I want to talk with Will about how he portrays the famous character, Richard Dreyfuss, and what he portrays in the film, kind of the innocent abroad kind of character. Okay, don't turn that dial back in a minute. It's Elizabeth Stewart, the great, great opportunity to talk with three wonderful actors. And we're talking about the Ensemble Theater Company, ETC's production of The Shark is Broken, which has to do with the actual Jaws character, the shark itself. And what is so fascinating, the backstory is so interesting. If you are going to see the play, which you must, you've got to take a listen to some of the reviews. Ian Shaw, the son of the performer, Jaws star Robert Shaw, the late Robert Shaw, who I thought was fantastic in everything he did. But Ian Shaw talks about writing the play and the trepidations that he had around it. And now we have the opportunity to talk with the cast. And Will is playing Richard Dreyfuss. You know, how do you get a handle on such a thing? I mean, what's the division between caricature and free-spiritedness and your own portrayal? How do you blend that together, Will?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Dreyfuss is, he's obviously a very well-known actor, and his affect is also very well.
Totally. Yeah, that's what I'm driving at.
You know, with now I'm blessed for once in my life. Normally I lament the fact that I don't sound like James Earl Jones, but for once it's proven to be a boon. So there's certain things that I already have. Just, I have a high pitched voice. I am naturally high strung. I've got curly hair, I've got a beard. And so, you know, there's certain like surface level things that I already share with him. And from there, you know, I love that you brought up, you know, the difference between caricature, right? Because the goal with these three guys, and it's, for me, it's a career first. You know, Adam has done the play before, so I think he can speak in more depth for this than I can. But this is my first time playing a guy who's been alive. You know, I've played historical characters before, but they've all been dead for 500 years. So there's nobody who's going to like cross-reference what I'm doing with, you know, whether or not Henry V actually did that, you know? Trying to honor who he is and specifically who he was at this time in his life is important. So that does mean trying to nail certain affects, certain physical repertoire. You know, we've bleached my beard. I wear blue contacts in the show to make me look a little bit more like him. But then it's more just about trying to understand his psychology and not, you know, this is not the Richard Dreyfuss of The Goodbye Girl. This is not the Richard Dreyfuss of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. This is not even the Richard Dreyfuss of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which is how I
am. Yes.
And he will always be the leading player to me. Hamlet in love with the old man's daughter, the old man thinks. But understanding this is a 26-year-old kid who is right at the start of his career, has found himself on set with people he reveres. It's mentioned in our play, and Dreyfuss has talked about this in a few interviews, that on the first day on set, he went to Robert Shaw's trailer and he knocked on his door and he said, "You're the best Claudius in Hamlet I've ever seen." He revered Shaw. And I think he was intimidated by Shaw because he was at this really interesting point in his career where he knew He knew that he loved the thing. He knew that he loved his particular take on the thing, but he did not yet have the validation of the establishment, and he did not yet have the validation even of his peers. You know, there's this interview that he did with a guy named Brian Linehan in 1974, where he talks about sitting on a coffee shop with the late Rob Reiner when they were both young men, and he goes on this long talk about how he's going to do this Hamlet at the Mark Taper Forum, and Olivier is going to come, and everyone's going to love it. And eventually Reiner had to say, Rick, you need to see a therapist. You're delusional. He'd remembered things. He was telling stories from a rehearsal process that had never happened and indeed would never happen. So he's at a pretty isolated point in his career. He's gaining a little bit of success. He's gaining a little bit of traction. But he doesn't know if he's good yet. And I think, you know, Pesha has talked a lot about trying to find, and you mentioned it, Ian Shaw was very concerned with trying to find the universal in this play. And I think that there is something, you know, it's three men on a boat. There's these three guys at such different points in their career, right? And each of them, although they are actors, they all have their own concerns and insecurities that I think everybody can relate to on some level. Like, I think Dreyfus is the young man. And I think everybody, regardless of gender, regardless of occupation, everybody remembers what it's like to be young, or they are young right now, and they know that particular brand of insecurity. So, sorry, that's a very long answer to your question, but I think that the answer is more about getting to the truth of like where this guy was in his life, that fueled all of these interactions that happened on the boat, as opposed to like trying to nail an exact impersonation.
So the first performance was last night. Is that correct?
It was, first preview performance.
All right. Was there anything you did that surprised you, that you were surprised at the audience reaction thereupon?
So too many to count. I mean, there's nothing. I was joking to the guys. It's like, I kind of went to a fugue state out there, because it's like, you know, you're hit with the audience and it's like, okay, here we go. One foot in front of the other. We'll be surprised every night. I mean, there's no point in saying what specifically surprised me out of context for your listeners who have not yet seen the play yet. They'll need to come see the play, and then they'll need to surprise us, because
what I mean is, was there a line that you were delivering that you had no idea was going to be funny, or you had no idea was going to be profound, and all of a sudden you had this reaction from the audience? You must have.
There's a reference to Close Encounters of the Third Kind that they really liked, which I think for me, the parts of this play that I really gravitate towards are the interactions between the guys. Like, that's the stuff that I personally find really, really funny. And so it was nice to know that, like, and the Close Encounters reference is also going to get a huge laugh. Honestly, the moment that surprised me the most was there's a moment where we're all talking about our fathers, and I realized in that moment, I'm talking about my father, and I'm a slow actor, you know, I didn't put this together till last night. It was like, oh, actually, because I'm sharing my information, my father to Shaw, and there was a point where it's like, I say I was shaken to my core, and last night I finally was like, oh, this whole thing is just about, this is just about trying to get Shaw's approval. Like, it's actually, this bit isn't actually about my dad at all. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
I think that's fantastic.
Every moment is a surprise.
Yeah, no, I think I get your point. I was just wondering if it, because it's so fresh, last night was so fresh, if there was something, whoa, I didn't realize that was going to be hysterical. I didn't realize that was going to be so sad or so poignant, et cetera. And the audience sort of came back and reflected on something you didn't know. Well, you answered my question. And the cool part of your answer was, you're so open to the fact that every night's going to be different. So you're not going to qualify by saying, yeah, this one line was a real humdinger. I mean, basically it's just like, okay, every night could be something different. So why don't y'all come and see it? So that's what I'm thinking. I want to move on. Am I, Gildart, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. So here's my question for you. So I was looking at all of the, you've got a lot of stuff online about yourself, and it's pretty amazing stuff. A lot of it is that you are, if you could make a word out of this, a narrative-tician, you're a narrative specialist. You know, and your career, it's there's so much narration throughout, you know, both as an actor, as a voice actor, et cetera. But even the roles that you've done, and the narrative, you know, obviously this an old English teacher, but the idea between a narrative piece of literature and an epic piece of literature. And, you know, there's different classifications of literature. And you're like, if you looked up at the dictionary of narrative face, it would be you because of all of your background. Now, you're a narrative. A narrativetician, yeah. And you're performing a playwright. So you're who is creating the narrative, or who did create the narrative. So you're performing the father of the writer, but you know there's like a triple narrative thing going on. So you know you yourself are a known narrative quantity. You are performing the lines written by a playwright whose father was a great performer and also very versatile and known for his narrative style and his voice. And I was thinking, wow, that's so interesting to me that there's all this synchronicity in what you're doing. Am I wrong?
No.
In a word. Can you reflect on how you put the part together?
I drank a lot of whiskey. It's an essential part of my preparation. Mr. Shaw did enjoy an occasional tipple. And that's, of course, very necessary, especially during the play.
Well, that's what I was hoping to drag Pesha into admitting, that the drinking diaries were actually having to do with these tipples. And yes, I understand what you're saying. That the performance is. Do you feel like that is a factor in his personality? Does it allow you a certain looseness? What's that like?
It's fun. It's fun to be drunk on stage.
Isn't it one of the hardest things a performer can do?
I don't know. I think there are other things, like Will played Hamlet. I think that's a little harder.
Being drunk is very hard, and Gilbert is very, very good at it on stage.
Yeah, I heard at one point that it's super difficult. It's a real challenge to the creative a performer, because it's so challenging, because people know what people act like when they're truly drunk. They just know. And to say, okay, I'm faking a drunk, you know, that's different. But to be performing a drunk, do you think that the American audience, because you've performed on a number of different stages all across the country, across the world, is the American audience different for you than, say, the British?
I became an actor only after I came to America, so I've never performed in England.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what the English are like anymore. I haven't lived there for many years. I like Americans a lot, and I enjoy being on a stage. So I don't know the other.
Okay, all right. So the idea. My final question for you. You played. And so maybe some of our younger listeners won't understand, but you played some just iconic soaps. We've got, you know, General Hospital, et cetera, number of other soaps. What's that like? I've heard that it's a frenetic thing to do. That it's tell me, how did you weather being a performer in the soaps?
It was great. I had just become an actor, and I got a job on General Hospital playing an English playboy. And I was on the General Hospital for, I don't know, for quite a while, but I never met a doctor. I just I went from Monte Carlo to Biarritz, and in my jet and on my yacht, speaking to beautiful people. It was great. It was a lot of fun. You have to go in the morning and you shoot an entire episode in a day.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. And so it's race, and you only ever get one shot at it unless you swear, really. And but it was great, and everybody was so wonderful, and people had been there for years. And
yes.
And they really had it down, and they knew who they were, and it's a funny, strange world that it was very fun to be a part of for a while.
So now I'm going to segue to another sort of cult thing. You know, the soaps, when I was in college, we'd all get together and we'd watch the soaps. That's what our, you know, Catholic girls dorm did. That's how we got away from, you know, our studies, et cetera. We saw you, I'm sure. You know, you also have done video game voicing. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how is that? I mean, that's also like a cultural anchor these days, just like the soaps were at one time. So the video game, I mean, what's that world like?
Well, again, it's a lot of fun. It depends. The one that I, the biggest profile one I was in was a Batman game called the Gotham Knights. And I played Alfred in that. And that was called motion capture. So what you do is you wear a strange suit with little lights on it, and you were in a big stage. It was in Montreal, a big stage. And you walk around acting, and they have lots of cameras that take photographs of you, film of you doing your thing. And then in almost real time, they can show you what you just did as your character. They can put it through a computer, and suddenly Alfred is there, and he's a little, he was a little smaller than me and a little more stooped, and he's wearing his clothes, doing the stuff that he does in the show that we just did. So it was a really fun experience. Sadly, it was cut short by COVID. And I ended up only voicing the character for the second half of it. But typically I've done just the voices on video games.
Okay, so just one final question. So when you're Alfred, and you're being put through the computer, and it's some sort of AI characterization, do they also do the set design? Is Wayne Manor there?
Yeah, no, it's not where you're, nothing is. You're shooting just in an empty set that has basically mats on the floor and cameras, all the, 360 degrees worth of cameras, like 100 cameras filming you. So they get everything, and then they can just create where you are and what you're wearing, and the only thing you, your voice is the only, and your actions are the only things that are you. Everything else changes.
When you looked at the dailies, for example, did you see that you were in a set?
They can put you anywhere, and they
can
click up and have you in. I mean, you maybe if you are at a computer, you're standing at a box so that you can act, but what you are dealing with in the scene can be taken away so that you can be anywhere doing anything.
Amazing. Okay, so thank you for that. And I
thank you.
Okay, don't turn that dial back in a minute. It's Elizabeth Stewart, the great, great opportunity to talk with three wonderful actors. And we're talking about the Ensemble Theater Company, ETC's production of The Shark is Broken. I want to move to Adam. Adam Poole plays Roy Scheider. And Adam, you performed in musicals, right? You've done musicals?
Yes, I've done some musicals. Yeah.
I see. So what's that? I mean, how... To be in a musical, for example. So now, contrast that for us. So you know, you're in this particular play, The Shark is Broken. You've done musicals, etc. What's the preparation time? I remember my background in ballet. We'd be okay. This is never going to work. It's just a terrible production. It's awful. The house manager sucks. Everything's terrible about it. And just basically, it's never going to come together. It's a big ensemble. We're all doing something creatively. It's choreographed. There's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it never is going to work. It never is going to work. And then the curtain comes up and it works.
Yeah, that seems to be a universal experience. It always comes together, whether you think it is or not.
Go for
and it definitely happens in musicals. I've been in several that have come together at the last minute. But as far as the difference of it, most of the time musicals get a little more rehearsal time because you have a whole nother week of music rehearsals and the band comes in and you mix all of that. And there's choreography on top of that. Takes a lot of time depending on how big the musical is. But I got my start in band when I was doing playing saxophone in the marching band. Mm-hmm. So then I got recruited by my drama teacher. He came in the band room once and said, I need a Dixieland jazz band for A Streetcar Named Desire in the background. So I got plucked out of there and I started playing on stage and then loved that experience so much, auditioned for the next musical, which happened to be 1940s Radio Hour, which then got me on a whole nother trajectory of auditioning for every musical and being very fortunate enough to be cast in almost all of them in high school, which is great. And then beyond. So I've done quite a few and I love it. I love singing. But when I came down to it, I really loved the character study of diving into real people that were actually playing in this one specifically, but just human relationships in the room, realistic plays. Yeah.
So now this is a question for you. The Roy Scheider is such a forceful character, you know, handsome, chiseled, et cetera, as you are, a beautiful man. Do you take him home?
What was that last part?
Do you take him home?
Do I take him home? Well, yes, he's definitely a part of me now. For a while, yeah, he's. I'm actually the exact same age that Scheider was when he filmed this movie. So it's very interesting to actually come in a body that's the same age that a person is going through this. He at this point in his career is kind of in the middle, but already is very well established and successful in certain ways. He's already got an Academy Award nomination. And he is very much still fighting for a lot of roles in Hollywood at this point. So he's not like coasting by any means. So he's also got a lot to fight for in this movie. He advocated for this role for Spielberg because Spielberg didn't know who to cast. So he had to fight for it and he got it. And then everything went to hell and he had no idea what he's doing here. He's like, did I make a mistake? Like everyone was on this production. And he's just trying to keep the peace and be like, let's get through this and be as professional as possible. Because if anything, that was a huge part of Scheider's reputation was his professionalism and his just calm, cool demeanor most of the time. Everyone has their breaking points, but I like to take that home with me, especially as Scheider, his professionalism and his calm, cool demeanor most of the time.
physicality. I mean,
I am getting a little spray tan for this production since I think that has a little bit to do with it, because normally I'm not this bronze. I am getting another spray tan tomorrow to brush the
Okay.
But at this point, especially in the 70s, sunbathing was so popular that everyone was out in the sun constantly, and Scheider was no exception.
And Richard, I just have to ask Adam one more question, then we'll close for the day. So Adam, you know, notoriously, we've talked a little bit with Pesha at the beginning of the interview. There's this toxic environment. Do you ever find yourself as the three of you? Do you ever find yourself falling into that toxic environment without actually knowing where that came from? In other words, does it kind of sweep into you into the performance?
Absolutely.
Does it?
Well, how do you mean by that? Jesus Christ.
You asked the wrong question.
No, not the actual toxicity. No, absolutely not. The energy of the room can get, you know, when we're playing these scenes, can get very alive and very, you know, it can move a lot. So as Roy is very much the mediator, and especially between these two characters, he can be quite volatile. So navigating that is not only Adam, but Roy is a challenge and is a fun, difficult challenge. But I would definitely not say it's toxic. It is very, it's very fun. It truly is fun to navigate it because we're all in a very safe space and it's very fun to
explore
the dangers of that. Yeah.
Right. I was just referring back to Pesha's beautiful Danger of Live Theater and wondering if that kind of toxicity would have affected, you know, the performance on stage as well. Final question I have to ask. Did you pick your T-shirt just for me?
Which T-shirt?
You, Adam.
Mine, yours? This one?
Oh,
don't you have, isn't it?
This is Boulder, Ireland. This is from North Carolina.
Okay. So, but isn't that a ship I'm seeing?
It is a ship. I did not do that intentionally. It's.
I'm so honored. Handsome young actor.
Absolutely.
T-shirt just for radio interviewer. Ancient radio interviewer is flummoxed and just embarrassed and so grateful. Well, thank you guys. Thank you very much. By the way, I guess my partner came in and said we're going to the performance February 21st. So we will see you then. I want to see it so exciting. One more shout out, Richard. By the way, we talked about toxic. We talked about booze. Be forewarned. This is recommended for age 13 and up. You're fine to bring your teenagers. Absolutely fine. As a matter of fact, you should have them see Jaws. And then, you know, that's a cult classic. And then you see the performance, and the show is running Wednesday through Sunday, February 4th, February 22nd, one show on the 10th. And it is at the Ensemble Theater Company. And you've got to see it. I mean, if you read the reviews, Richard, that I did last night, the Broadway reviews are just amazing. And it's funny because the playwright, Ian Shaw, whose father was, you know, the famous star of Jaws, Robert Shaw, he didn't expect this to get anywhere past the little tiny regional, like, theaters in England. He just didn't expect it. All of a sudden, it's Broadway material. And now because of some foresightful board members of the Ensemble Theater Company, we have it here. And directed by a director who is known for discovering new works. So that's an amazing synchronicity there, too. Well, thank you, everybody, for being with us today. I sure appreciate all of you guys and Will Block, Gildart Jackson, Adam Poole, and, of course, our new professor of theater, Pesha Rudnick, as well, the director. Thank you all for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for the time.
Bye, everybody. Thank you for making the time. I sure do appreciate your time. Very short notice. Bye, everybody.